Howdy ho, everybody. Welcome back, Visit Julian podcast. We have a guest today that I guess is somewhat new to the area, and we want to make sure we get the word out. And this is a winery and vineyard, Walnut Tree Ranch. And today with me, I have Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Robin.
Thanks for coming. Totally appreciate it. I love getting the information about new things that are available. I think Julian has so much to offer, and when people like you sprout up and provide and offer more things that people can enjoy when they're here, it really benefits the entire town, and it benefits a lot more people who learn about things that they can come and do here. So I'm really glad to know that you're here.
Thanks. Yeah. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So I was looking at your website. Full disclosure, I enjoy a glass of wine. I am not a wine person, so I won't be ignorant. I know how to say Sangiovese, right? I was like, I can say that. But so I may ask you some of those questions and pronounce things wrong, so I apologize in advance for that. Mm-hmm. You guys started really in 2008.
That's when we planted our first vine.
Yeah.
Yes. We actually aren't real new to the area. We bought this property on Mesa Grande Road in the year 2000.
Oh, okay.
So it's been over 22 years.
Yeah, see, so you're older than I am, and Julian, and I've been here, I'm on my 19th year, and you know, we're still considered.
When we bought the property, I was still in the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
I was about halfway through my career in the corporate world. So, you know, we didn't move up here until I retired.
Got it.
And but we bought the property, it was just bare land, not just cattle. It was cattle pasture.
Wow.
And we built everything that's there. So we had to bring in the power, put in the driveway, put in the wells, you know, everything.
Everything.
Yeah. And the vineyard and the winery wasn't some kind of grand plan when we bought the property.
Sure.
In fact, we weren't even thinking about planting grapes or having a winery.
Mm-hmm.
It really was about having a place out in the country.
Sure.
Because I grew up on a ranch, mm-hmm. a farm or ranch,
mm-hmm.
with cattle, mm-hmm. and I just, to me, that was home. You know?
Totally
so
understand that.
So we really just wanted a place that we could go to on the weekends,
mm-hmm.
you know, and get away from the city, and something that we could start to develop,
mm-hmm.
you know. So what we did initially is just create a place that we could come to. You know, we built a house there as a second home,
sure.
and we still lived in the city.
Uh-huh.
Up until 2015, really.
Wow.
So, because I was still working.
Yeah. Not that you're not working now. It's just in a different way,
true.
Right? What
true.
Is that thing? Find something you love, and you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of true in this case. My wife likes to tease me that I'm not retired.
Right.
And I'm really not. Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking to really retire or
sure.
just go fishing.
Right.
That wouldn't work for me anyway.
Right.
I need to be busy with doing something that's, you know, real and productive.
Sure, yeah.
So where I'm always learning something new.
Oh, that's such a great way to look at things, yeah.
So that's really how it all started. Well, in my corporate life, I had the opportunity to travel all over the planet
mm-hmm.
and meet a lot of different people. A lot of different cultures and foods and wine
mm-hmm.
and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really through that experience that I became a bit of a wine connoisseur. Of sorts, really, because I was, you know, I was in restaurants all over Europe,
sure.
South America, Asia, you know, and I was very often the host for a dinner,
mm-hmm.
you know, with other business people.
Understood. Uh-huh.
And I just started learning about wines. And selecting wines for dinner, so I got the opportunity on the company's
dime.
Really, yeah, you know, to experience a lot of different wines, really good wines.
Yeah,
you know, so that's kind of what got me interested, more and more interested in wines. And then I made this silly decision to plant some grapes mm-hmm. in 2008, and it just kind of built from that.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a grand plan. You know, it was and the grape that I selected, or the variety, was driven by kind of a love that I had developed for the Tuscany region, mm-hmm. in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular...
Okay, we can't ignore it. It's Christmas decorating time, and someone is drilling a nutcracker into the building. And that is what I love about this podcast, is that life is going on around us. So that people listening now know when they drive by and see the nutcracker on the porch, they'll know what they were hearing. All right, so Tuscany region.
Tuscany region of Italy, yes. So, like I said, I had the opportunity, when I was in Europe, no matter where in Europe I was, for the weekend, I would always make sure I ended up in Italy.
Oh, that's so great.
And so I could spend the weekend, typically in the Tuscany area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a particular wine, Tuscan, Italian.
There shouldn't be more, too much.
Italian wine. Yeah, so in one of the more significant brands, if you will, or labels in Italy, are a wine called Brunello.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are familiar with Chiantis, from the Chianti region of Tuscany. Well, Brunellos come from the Montalcino, the town of Montalcino, which is a old hilltop town,
mm-hmm.
all stone, walled town. Beautiful place. And only wines that come from that mountain, on the slopes of that mountain,
uh-huh.
surrounding that town, can be called Brunellos.
Oh,
and they have to follow a specific recipe, really,
sure.
in how they're made, that's mm-hmm. that's defined by Italian regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I became kind of enamored with Brunellos, and I would order them, in restaurants all over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of why I got really focused on Sangiovese.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, decided in the year 2008 to plant some vines, mm-hmm. on the ranch. And that's how it all started.
Now, I read on your website that you cloned something from Italy.
I didn't. So the way vineyards are developed are, most vineyards are planted with what are called bench grafts,
uh-huh.
Which... they're grafted, so there's a root. You actually pick
uh-huh.
a root stock
uh-huh.
That has certain characteristics that it imparts to the vine, and then you pick what's called a cultivar or clone, which is the actual type of variety of grape.
Okay.
So like Cab Sauvignon or Sangiovese or mm-hmm. Malbec or whatever, you select that variety. And then there are multiple clones of any given variety.
Oh, okay.
So like Sangiovese, there's dozens of different clones that come from different parts of Tuscany, typically. That's where they originate. And so what the big nurseries in California do is they will advertise, they'll have a number of different clones, and you, the vineyard developer,
uh-huh.
You literally can pick the clone you want, marry it up with a rootstock that you want.
Uh-huh.
They graft the two together, and then they sell you that, and that's what you plant.
Okay.
Well, my Sangiovese clones are actually from from vines on the mountain of Montalcino.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So that's where they come from, and I selected that particular clone because of the desire to try to replicate a Brunello.
Right, got it. So you sparked a question in me then. And again, not being a wine person, but doesn't the weather, climate, elevation, all that stuff affect the taste of a wine? So even if you clone something,
right.
and let's use the word clone because that's like, exactly a clone, it may not turn out to be exactly the same wine because you're at a different elevation or the frost, that kind of stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And in fact, that whole concept, the French have a term for it called terroir.
Mm.
The idea that the fruit literally takes on the character of the place
mm-hmm.
that it is grown.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, that's everything. That is the soil, that's the elevation,
mm-hmm.
that's the sun, the amount of sun it gets.
Right.
Your
attitude while you're out there.
Even that, they say, in
sure.
fact, literally they do say, if there's a horse ranch next door, it'll affect the terroir of,
sure.
of that fruit.
Yeah.
Just kind of everything combined in
mm-hmm.
the environment affects the fruit.
Yeah, the end product.
Yeah, the end product. Yeah. And obviously the environment, the weather has a huge impact.
Yeah, and we know nobody knows that better than people in Julian because of our, you know, our apple history, and things can change from season to season. So that's something as a are you a vintner? Is that what we call you?
Yes, I am a vintner.
Yeah, so
I'm also a vineyard manager.
Okay, but so as a vintner, that's something that you have to adjust to and learn from, and as soon as you do that, the weather changes, the patterns, and all that. Yeah,
the weather, well, you know, the weather is something you can't control at all.
Exactly.
But there are a lot of things you can control, and in grape growing, there's a number of key things. Obviously, the nutrients that, you know, that are supplied to the vines. Water is a huge one. Mm-hmm. Water is how you really control the vine. And so the reason California is the wine capital of North America is because the climate is right, and the fact that it doesn't rain here a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So the vineyard manager can control the water to the vines.
Got it.
We're not at the mercy of, you know, of what comes out of the sky, the rain.
Yeah.
In fact, it's better if you're not. Mm-hmm. Having a dry growing season is actually a good thing for grape growers.
That's great.
It's a good thing. Because now you get to control the water.
Sure.
Instead of Mother Nature just throwing whatever
at you. And you like scrambling to adjust to it. You know, it's like you watch those romantic movies that always take place in the vineyard, you know, and people are out there in the middle of the night fanning and doing all that crazy stuff, and they're all in sexy clothes. And so we'll forever picture you that way now out there fanning the grapes.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing you bring that up, because it is so opposite of reality.
Right, sure.
A vineyard is not a romantic place. It's hard work.
Sure.
It takes a lot of effort. The hardest part of making a bottle of wine is all happens in the vineyard.
Sure.
And also, really, the quality and, you know, of the bottle of wine at the end of the day all happens in the vineyard, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
So
how long does wine get aged in a barrel?
It depends. Yeah. It depends on what the winemaker is trying to accomplish, the style.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many, many variables that can go into that. But it starts with having good quality fruit.
Got it.
And again, controlling I was going back to the nutrients, the water, and then really the sun exposure, which is kind of all rolled up into what's called canopy management.
Got it.
So it's how much you open the canopy up to let the air flow through, how much you let the sun in onto the fruit. All those things factor into the chemistry of the grapes.
That's crazy.
That's
a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Happy retirement, Paul. Yeah, exactly. Good for you. You made a good choice.
Basically, from end of May until early August, those two and a half months, you're chained to the vineyard.
Yeah, you live out there for the wine, sure.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the varieties that you offer.
So, as we've talked about, Sangiovese.
Sangiovese.
The most, actually, it's the most widely planted Italian variety. The Italians have hundreds of different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you're going to have a portfolio of red wines, you almost have to have Cabernet Sauvignon.
Sure.
Which is a French variety, of course, out of Bordeaux, primarily in the Bordeaux region of France.
Of course.
Although it's grown all over the world. Mm-hmm. It's the number one wine on the planet, and the number one wine in North America, the number one wine in California, you name it, it's the number one wine.
Sure.
So that was the reason I decided to plant Sangiovese. Cabernet Sauvignon.
Uh-huh.
And then the last one is Zinfandel. Mm-hmm. So those are the three. Zinfandel... probably originated, they believe, in the Croatia area of Europe. In Italy, it is grown fairly extensively in the southern part of Italy, and it's referred to as Primitivo, the grape. But California kind of adopted Zinfandel years ago.
As a state wine?
Yeah, it is kind of the state variety. Mm-hmm. Widely grown, especially after Prohibition, when grape vineyards started being replanted, Zinfandel It's just wide, very widely planted.
All right, so here's another one of my ignorant questions. Is that white wine?
No.
No. Is there a white Zinfandel?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm not crazy. Yeah, unfortunately. All right.
And the reason I say unfortunately is because it gave, white Zinfandel gave Zinfandel
a bad name.
It did. It really
right.
did.
No, I totally get that.
No, Zinfandel is a red variety. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a medium-bodied wine. Mm-hmm. The problem with the white Zinfandel, what happened, that was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. There was a number of winemakers that decided to basically make a rosé, a mm-hmm. light rosé, sure. out of Zinfandel. Yeah. And you can make a rosé out of any red grape. Mm-hmm. And that's what became white Zinfandel, and they left it sweet. Mm-hmm. So most wine aficionados mm-hmm. don't like sweet wines.
Right.
But it was very popular, and primarily amongst women. Mm-hmm. Especially novice women wine drinkers. Uh-huh. They like sweet wines.
Yeah.
They just do.
Yeah.
You know, it just works on the palate.
Yeah, sure.
And so white Zinfandel was very
successful
financially.
All right. Well, at least I'm glad it
so
wasn't.
So that's how all that
completely
started.
Crazy. So let's move on to the experience people can have at your location. First and foremost, it's important for people to know that you're appointment only.
Right.
Right. So, but then let's talk about the kind of experience that you offer via these appointments.
Okay. So just to set a little bit of groundwork there. So in 2015, I mm-hmm. retired from the corporate world mm-hmm. and we built our winery. Mm-hmm. And so up until then, we just gave the fruit away.
Mm. Wow.
And we also planted the other two varieties. So we only had the Sangiovese in the ground since 2008 and 2015. That was 7 years. Those plants were nice and mature, producing good fruit, mm-hmm. but we didn't have a winery yet.
Sure.
And so I retired in January of 2015, mm-hmm. and then that spring, we planted the Cab and mm-hmm. the Zin, and we built the winery. And we got the winery completed mm-hmm. just about.
March of 2020?
No. We got it completed just in time for the 2015 harvest. Mm. So that was our very first harvest.
Great.
In 2015. The point is, we built this winery, you know, from the ground up.
Sure.
I made several decisions about how I wanted the winery to function, mm-hmm. and one of the things that we did is we built a cave. Mm-hmm. So we have a wine cave mm-hmm. where we keep our barrels and our bottles for aging.
Is it underground?
It's underground.
Okay.
It's underground. It's built into the side of a hill, mm-hmm. and then the rest of the winery building is built over it, so that you walk into the cave from the main from the fermentation floor.
So you've really created an experience.
Yeah.
Sure.
So part of the experience, so that leads to the experience. Mm-hmm. So the experience is we do a tour. So when you come to Walnut Tree Ranch Vineyard and Winery, mm-hmm. you're not just going to sit and, you know, taste wines.
Yeah.
Which to me is kind of like, you can do that in a bar. I mean, you can do that in most tasting rooms. That's what they are, is a glorified bar. Mm-hmm. I mean, or it's, you know, kind of a tailored bar for wines, those their specific wines.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is offer an experience that's quite different than that, mm-hmm. much more personal. Mm-hmm. We actually do a walking tour into the winery, because mm-hmm. our tasting room is separate from the winery. Uh-huh. It's a separate building. So we greet our visitors there at the tasting room, mm-hmm. and then we walk over to the winery building, and I give a tour of the building. I give a tutorial on the basics of winemaking, mm-hmm. really, from harvest, mm-hmm. through crush, through fermentation, through barreling to bottling, mm-hmm. the whole process.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I give a tutorial. And then we walk back to the tasting room, and then people can taste our vintages, mm-hmm. And, you know, spend the rest of the time there, mm-hmm. In the tasting room. Mm-hmm. So that's how we're trying to differentiate ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And that's why we really have to do everything by appointment, because we're not set up for people just to drive in, because I do the tours and the tutorial, uh-huh. The winemaking tutorial myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is also quite rare. Mm-hmm. Usually if you visit a tasting room, you're not talking to the winemaker.
Right, sure. Uh-huh.
So yeah. In our case, you are.
That's great.
You're talking to the winemaker.
So are your appointments available 7 days a week, or what is your...
No, we're set week? Up so we take appointments Thursday through Sunday,
okay.
afternoons. Mm-hmm. So from 1 to 5. So basically what we've done is set up our calendar, appointment mm-hmm. calendar, so there are two slots each of those 4 days a week.
Oh, awesome. And do they have to call you to make an appointment, or do you have them online?
It's all online.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So you go to our website, you click on the request a reservation button, takes you to our reservation system.
That's great.
You can see the calendar, you know, out to the future, you know, months to the future. You can pick the date and the time. And
so let me ask you this now, and I think if someone's going to your website, I think they're going to have this question. There's two of us, and we want to make an appointment. Do we get put in with up to 8 other people? Because I remember saying on the site, it's when I make an appointment, it's just us. So then your appointment can be from 2 to 10 people. Is that it?
Right.
Okay.
It's not really a hard limit of 10. It's just a group larger than 10 gets to be a little untenable.
Sure.
So 10 to 12, I say 10 on the website to try to keep the size of the group
and the expectation of what's available and how well you can accommodate.
Yeah, but no, totally it's whoever makes the reservation, that 90 minute time slot
that's
is there.
Theirs. Okay.
I've had just single individuals.
That's funny.
Most often it's couples.
Yeah.
And then other times, actually also quite often we'll get two couples.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come in one car, you know, couples in one
friends.
Car.
Uh-huh.
So before a foursome.
Yeah, yeah.
The largest group I've ever had was 8 mm-hmm. so far.
And that worked out well.
Oh, yeah,
you enjoyed it.
Well.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. So Thursday through Sunday in the afternoons, they book an appointment on your website, and they get 90 minutes is basically the goal or the plan. Because obviously you probably have an appointment thereafter. So
right.
Yeah.
So there's a half hour buffer in between. So all the time slots are 2 hours, but it actually shows up as 90
minutes. Yeah, because, you know, you might have to go to the restroom or something. You know?
Yeah, well, you have to kind of prepare for the next.
Maybe you need a cheeseburger. I don't know, but, you know,
yeah.
That half hour is yours. We're not going to question you on it. You deserve it.
One of the things that we do between, for those people who make the reservation at 1 o'clock, uh-huh. so it's basically a 1 o'clock reservation and a 3.
Yeah.
And the people that make the 1 o'clock reservation, so, you know, I need about a half hour in between, so 2:30 is kind of the end of their time slot. What we do, though, is we don't say, well, you have to leave.
Right.
You know, we offer them the option of, I can take them up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
We have this lookout spot mm-hmm. where they can sit in the shade.
Uh-huh.
And look out, and you can see all the way to the ocean.
Awesome.
You know, you can see Ramona, all the Cuyamacas, you know, just a beautiful, expansive view. Mm-hmm. And they can sit there and sip on, you know, a bottle of wine that they purchased from us. That's something we offer specifically for that 1 o'clock slot.
Yeah.
So that people don't have to feel that they have to
leave. Rushed. Yeah,
they're
sure.
Rushed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds great. So in the show notes, I know that you have lots of photos on your website. So with your permission, I'll grab some of those,
mm-hmm.
put them in the show notes. Because if people are listening not while they're driving, there's a slideshow that accompanies the podcast. So they can see that. I'll make sure I put the link to your website, all that, because all the pertinent information in the show notes so people can get a hold of you.
Sure.
So I always like to ask when we're about to wrap up, hey, did you hear any weird noises while we were making the podcast? No, I'd like to make sure that I give you the opportunity to cover something I might not have asked you about. What is something that you wanted to talk about that if I didn't mention, or you want for sure that the listeners know about you in case we didn't get to it?
Well, I think one of the things is, you know, so we're sitting here in Julian.
Mm-hmm.
We are about 15 minutes away from here.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite different where we are. The area that we're in is actually called Mesa Grande.
Right. Uh-huh.
And it's on Mesa Grande Road, you know, winds its way through Mesa Grande.
How far back are you on that?
We're about at the 5.5 mile mark.
Okay.
So if you go to Santa Isabel, mm-hmm. or if you're at Santa Isabel coming up from the city
mm-hmm.
or going down from here,
right.
You go on 79 uh-huh. towards Warner Springs,
right.
just a couple miles, just mm-hmm. past the Santa Isabel Mission,
mm-hmm.
is Mesa Grande Road. It's a left turn as you're going toward Warner.
Right.
And you just go up that road. Well, the reason we bought that property, in fact, is I think it's one of the, and a lot of people have said this, it's one of the most beautiful areas in San Diego County.
Yeah.
It's rolling hills. Mm-hmm. In fact, it reminds me of Tuscany.
Mm.
It's rolling hills with oaks, you know, with live oaks, mm-hmm. And other varieties of California oak tree,
mm-hmm.
you know, all over. It's cattle ranches, just beautiful countryside.
Right.
And I'm also a helicopter pilot, and I've flown all over San Diego County, mm-hmm. and I mean, right down in the weeds,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
literally landing in places that are just out in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
Uh-huh. And I have to say that it's hard to beat the Mesa Grande area for just absolute natural beauty.
Yeah, you're right. I've been out there taking, when you're a mom up here, you take your kids' friends home, and that's how I ended up at Mesa Grande Road.
Yeah, it's
very lovely out there, and I've seen it from over at the, you know, the Santa Isabel Nature Center, and that Santa Isabel East, you know, that kind of view.
You know, the Santa Isabel Valley is beautiful too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, to me, that is also one of the most beautiful areas in San Diego County. But Mesa Grande is not San Isabel Valley. It's a different experience.
Yeah.
You know, we're a few hundred feet higher.
Right.
And it's rolling hills. Uh-huh. You know, it's not just one giant valley like San Isabel. The valley is. It's rolling hills and cattle ranches.
Do you like where you live, Paul?
It sounds like
you like it a little bit.
Absolutely do.
Well, and so it's great that you're inviting people to come see it and then also enjoy wine while they're doing so.
Right. That's the whole idea.
Right. So thank you so much for coming in and talking all about the experience. You're very informative. And I'm sure people are going to really look forward to coming and visiting you.
Yes. Well, yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Paul. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Rob.
All right.